And a very good morning. My name's David Johnson with the amateur radio call sign G4DPZ. I'm the honorary secretary of AMSAT UK, which represents the building and development of amateur satellites within the UK. We've got about 400 members, several and a lot worldwide as well. My day job is with the Goonhilly Earth Station, working on deep space networks and the software development for it. What you're going to be seeing today is a spin-off from what I do in the day job, but I'll talk about that as the slides go through. If we can get the next slide up, come on please. There we go. Imagine you're in 2025. You're on the moon. We finally got to the moon, and we've got a moon base there, and you want to connect back to Earth. You click on your browser. There's going to be a slight delay of about 2.5 seconds because the light time between the Earth and the moon is about 1.3 seconds, and the round trip light time is 2.5 seconds. And it's not just browsers, it's all communications between Earth and the Moon. It's not because the network's broken, and it's not because the bandwidth is low. It's just the physics of the speed of light. It's not just the Moon, it's the problem with Mars. We may not put stations on Mars, but we're certainly sending orbital assets out there and landers. They have exactly the same problem. A lot of the agencies have developed their own strategies for communication with these assets around the planets. Each one is subtly different. What NASA and ESA are trying to do is rationalize this into a specific protocol for communications between assets and the ground. We know how to build rockets, we know how to land spacecraft, but we need a new infrastructure for communication with the outer planets. In the day job, my day-to-day communication, day-to-day communication on our deep space network is to the Moon and Mars, and we can hear stations out at Jupiter as well. But each time we have to communicate with one of these assets, we have to change all our configurations. And we're trying to avoid this for our mission operators. We're going to be getting to the moon in the next couple of years. Whether we build moon bases in that time, it's a question. But there certainly will be rovers. There'll be rovers going to the poles to detect water, etc. We need something that is useful for everybody. We're trying to bring some commonality to it. Commonality in communications, in navigation, in timing, and in data networks. It's the boring stuff that makes all this possible. I put boring in, that's probably the wrong word, but it's the stuff that we take for granted. We take it for granted around the Earth. Around the Earth, we've got GPS. It's ubiquitous. It's in your mobile phones. It's in your cars for your GPS tracking. It's for navigation of aircraft and military resources, of course. Many, many GPS systems, GPS, Galileo, the Russians have one, the Chinese have one. But I was talking to a colleague probably about 10 years ago, and he joked, we're going to put GPS around the moon. I went, no, you're joking. And it is coming to fruition. There have been some experiments with Artemis, which I showed you in a couple of slides ago, that tried to use GPS from Earth to track assets around the moon. And it worked to a limited extent, but just the range is too far. So we do need GPS around the moon. The moon is a very strange object. It's you wouldn't expect it to have a very strong magnetic field, but the gravitational field. But it has some very strange effects, and putting things into lunar orbit aren't as easy as they are around the Earth. So as well as the technology for the communication, there's also technology for the management of the satellites as well. For those who know a little bit about the internet, there is a protocol whereby we send a packet to the endpoint to say, I'm here. We get an app, we get an acknowledgement, and you acknowledge the acknowledgement. That's even before you start doing the communications. On Earth, it's fairly easy. We have stable routes. The internet is self-healing and can cope with dropouts of networks. Space introduces other problems. We have, as I've said before, we have extremely long delays. 6 seconds. I've got another slide actually showing what the delays are, but significant delays between the two bodies we're talking to. There's also another problem is that the links are intermittent. We have a set of ground stations around the Earth for Deep Space Network. It's Canberra, ourselves in Goonhilly, Madrid. And Goldstone in NASA. So that's four ground stations around the world. They don't see the asset all the time. Yeah, there will be worldwide coverage, but at some point there will be handover from one ground station to the next to do the communications. That's true. Yeah, with the moon, it's always obvious in the sky, but the Earth's rotating underneath it. So we only ever see it for probably about 8 hours at a time above the horizon, probably six. The outer planets are easier. Mars is easier because once it's above the horizon, it's there for quite some time. But there is still the handover between the ground stations. I talked about the problem why TCP/IP breaks. Our sending of a connection, the acknowledgement, that can take 3.9 seconds. Maybe a little bit, that varies a little bit. Mars is much further away. It's, at its worst case, it's something like 30 minutes away. So to send these three packets takes quite some time. It can take up to an hour just to get that communication started. That's not tenable. So we've got to come up with a solution to overcome those basic problems. Typical timings for the communications. We're talking milliseconds on the Earth. The geostationary satellite, 120 milliseconds. If you come over to the AMSAT village, we can probably demonstrate that by somebody saying hello, and then there'll be a slight delay as it comes back. The moon, as I said, 1.3 seconds light time. Mars and Jupiter, all very, very challenging for us. As a Zoom call to Mars, you say hello. 20 minutes later, somebody says hello back. Not viable. So what we need is a mechanism for communicating with the body, with the orbiter that's going around the body, and then a mechanism for the orbiter to talk to a lander or a station. That's probably easier because the times are shorter. On the moon or Mars itself, we can still use LAN, we can still use Wi-Fi and Bluetooth because the ranges are short. It's getting over the longer distances that is the problem. So how are we going to get over this? Imagine you're in the past and you've got a letter to send. You give it to your postman. The postman goes to your sorting office. It gets sorted. Then it sits in a pigeonhole for some time before another little man comes along, picks it up, moves it on to the next sorting office, sorts again, another delay. Same principle that we would see that we're trying to implement to be overcome the problem of the delays. We're sending little packets. We're sending bundles of data that can wait in time before the next opportunity to send that packet on to a spacecraft or a lander or whatever. This is what we believe that the Internet of the Solar System will look like. I'll talk a little bit. I'll mention the word store and forward, and I'll come on to that in a second. We're doing something called a delay-tolerant networking. In other words, it will allow for those delays of orbital mechanics, of availability of ground stations, and so on. So we can store the data, we can carry it forward in time, we can forward the data onto another asset, we can deliver it to its final destination. We create something called a bundle. It's a packet of data. Your whole packet of data might be a video you're trying to send, or it could be a command that you're trying to send, which is quite long. But because of the orbital mechanics and the availability of spacecraft, you can't send it all in one piece. So we split this into little bundles. Flight time for a bundle is still 22 minutes to Mars. So we have to create these little bundles, send them one at a time. And I'll show you. I'll talk about more how we do bundling in a second. But basically, we're breaking a large packet of data into small bundles to be transmitted. Sorry, excuse me. We have to worry about when the availability of the assets. It could be that a spacecraft has been tasked to do a lot of things, not just receive the commands. So it's the availability of the ground stations, it's the availability of the orbiting asset, it's the availability and it's the position of the asset in space. Lots and lots of things to consider. So we have to predict where all these things are in time. It's already running in space. The International Space Station has been running high-performance disrupted technology networks. They've been using them for video downlinks through the TDRS system. They've won quite a few awards. Unfortunately, because of the politics within the United States at the moment, JPL has lost a lot of contracts, and unfortunately HDN has died as a mechanism for transmission. Really sad. I've used HDN as part of the day job as some testing. It is really good, and it's such a shame. The Korean Pathfinder has already proved it as a protocol to the moon in 2024. And JPL, with their own developments, have done testing with ION. I say DTN, disruptive mechanisms. ION, which is its prefix, is interplanetary overlay network. So it sits on the top of the DTN stack. NASA are producing something called LunarNet. Well, LunarNet is the proposal for all the agencies to talk to each other to come up with a standard for this communication. As I said, all these protocols are in space today. There is an organization called Internet Society, and they have an interplanetary chapter, which I'm a member of. Their recommendation is for, the quote is, to soar and forward a networking that should be a basis for communications that traverse paths where conventional internet protocols cannot work, which is exactly the step, which is exactly what we're trying to do. The report called it a DTN and BP suite, which I've talked about, the disruptive mechanism and the bundling of packets. So we are conforming to what they requested. They also said it shouldn't just be the agencies, it should be other organisations. This is where AMSAT and the amateur radio community come into this. We'll talk about that in a second. The DTN stack is actually built up of several pieces. The bundle protocol, which breaks up the pieces of your large file into small bundles of data. A system called LTP. Well, LTP is a mechanism where these bundles can get transmitted through the system. You can't guarantee that the delivery of the bundle will happen correctly. Every bundle gets identified, and you send the stream of bundles through the protocol, and the LTP protocol goes, yes, I've got that. Oh, I missed that one. I've got that one. And then it retries to get to pick up that bundle again. It's quite a complex protocol, and there are lots of exchanges of data, but the delivery is guaranteed, even though it may take quite a bit of time. But it does overcome the problem of the delay within TCP. Store and forward, which I mentioned before, this is the typical story that we talk about in the day job. A mission control center somewhere in Europe or in the United States wants to send a command or get telemetry back from an asset. The mission controls will send the data to the ground station, which will then transmit it to the orbiter. The orbiter receives it, stores it on disk. 40 minutes later, because it's going around the moon, it sees its lander. It gets the opportunity to send that data to the lander. The lander acknowledges it. The asset. The asset then acknowledges it back to the Earth. Ground station then acknowledges it back to the mission and control center. So we've actually got a complete end-to-end solution. LTP manages all this for us. We've got over the problem of the delays. We've actually guaranteed that packet is going to arrive at its destination. I talked about windows of opportunity. Mission control, ground station, orbiting asset, and lander. Each of these are windows in time, and it's. One of the critical things within the system is the management of these time windows. There has to be a master mechanism for doing all the predictions. This is under debate at the moment about how we're going to do this. There are examples of this, but it's still in development. As always with the agencies, they have committees, and it takes the committees a bit of time to actually decide what they really want to do. What we're trying to do is build an infrastructure for exploration, and we want to make these systems open as well. So all the agencies can use them, third parties can use them, and I'll go on to something else in a second where one of the projects I'm involved with is going to get involved as well. I'm going to talk about Radiant. Radiant is the amateur radio version of the protocol. I'll go into that a bit more in a second. The proposal is for collaboration, transparency, interoperability, because each organisation will implement it slightly, sorry, the implementation may be different, but the interoperability, how these systems talk to each other, should be identical. I've just been going through an exercise with ESA for a set of students to write several of these protocols. We had 23 teams. We did a workshop about 6 weeks ago, and we had five teams' interoperability working perfectly. So we actually got out into academia to test out some of these protocols. I'm looking at my time. I said where amateur radio fits in. We are trying to get involved with this. I take my Goonhilly hat off, and I put my amateur radio hat on, and we come up with a package called Radiant. Enter Radiant. Radio amateur delay tolerant interplanetary network testbed. Radiant seemed like a good acronym. If professionals are doing this, why can't we do it as radio amateurs? And we come up with Radiant. It's an open source standards protocol that can run on any node run by a radio amateur. We set ourselves a roadmap. Keep it simple to start with. And that's the stack of my phase one mechanism. With two radios, two modems, and there's a Raspberry Pi sat in that box on the top, and that's actually demonstrating the transmission of a one megabyte file using the bundle protocol, using LTP over the radio. It's a bit slow, but I'm just testing the protocol, and it works. It works really well. Because it's open source, I've developed it in C, C++, and in Rust. So it can be done in a variety of ways. The next step will be to move it to a short delay. For amateur radio, we have the QO100 satellite. If you come over to the AMSAT village, you'll see our mediumly sized dish pointing at QO100. The next step is to build a flat sat, basically a small satellite on the bench, and one of the boards within the satellite will be a test bed for running DTN. If you come over to the AMSAT village, I will show you what a CubeSat looks like. It's a 10 by 10 by 10 centimeter small satellite. Having done that, we would love to get that satellite, that board, into space. AMSAT UK, which is the organization I'm involved with, are building and designing our second CubeSat, which is 2U, so it's 20 centimeters by 10 by 10. And one of the boards in there, fingers crossed, will be a demonstrator for that. And it will fly. It'll be our second satellite that's gone up. Our current one is now 11 years old and is still going. The ultimate step, which is what my bosses set me up for all this, really, is to actually fly a payload around the moon, a cislunar payload. So having proved it on the CubeSat, his sort of time scale is maybe 4 years. Dave, you can't retire until that packet with your name in it, carried by LTP, has gone around the moon. So that's my challenge. I retire in 5 weeks. So I've got a nice little retirement job to do. My wife's not very happy about this, but that's another story. So I've talked about what we're going to be doing. The partners involved. I'm from AMSAT UK. We have another organization called AMSAT DL, which is our German colleagues, and they also design and launch satellites. I've mentioned the geostationary satellite, that's theirs. So we have communications to it. We have digital TV coming down from it, which you can see at the AMSAT village. It's a collaboration. we want to get amateur radio operators involved and the professional community, hence the third line in there. My day job is with Goonhilly, but our chief exec has said, you know, we can help you as much as we can, which is great. Closing thought. The current internet connects the world. The next generation of networks will connect worlds. That's what we're looking for. If you want to get involved, you can email me at radiant@ansat.com address. We're looking for developers. We're looking for software development radio hackers. Pardon the pun. That's not meant to be offensive by a hacker. They are a great bunch of people who do some wonderful work. We're looking for network engineers, terrestrial engineers and space engineers. And we're looking for space enthusiasts like me. We are a competitive bunch, the amateur radio community. And we're looking for ground station operators. Be the commercial or be the amateur or be the academic. The slides will come up later, so there is further reading. I've mentioned the Solar System Internet Report, which is all that this is based on. HDTN, unfortunately, is no longer with us, but it's a good read. The NASA Ion DTN. Is the fundamental spec. So that's really well worth a read. We've also got our own webpage, radiant.amsatuk.org, where you'll find all the details. And that's it. Thank you very much indeed.